So I'm going to talk to you for a while. And nudge into a thought, an idea, which we can talk about this afternoon, of love. And in particular, a love that has been lost, rejected, or as Rev. Master G would say, slightly saddened. You reach out your hand and it's not received, and maybe pushed back. And that's a subtle thing, and sometimes there's even, well, often quite big saddened loves. And I believe that our nature is to be open to that which calls to us, which you might say is love, and that we long to respond in that way, in an unconditional way. It is written in the rules for meditation, and we recite it each day. We'll do that this afternoon. When the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. I'd like to say lost sight of, since I don't think one can actually lose Buddha mind. Or you could say can't lose one's nature as a Buddha, as an enlightenment being, which I believe is one way to talk about Buddha, an enlightenment being. And whatever one's views are about oneself and others, and no matter how unenlightened one's actions and the actions of others might be, our perception of them, the fundamental enlightened nature, Buddha nature, is there also intact. How could it be otherwise, actually? If there is no separate eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, as we sing in the scripture of great wisdom in the morning, how can one lose anything if nothing is separate? And this is pointing to the truth of the matter. Empty of individual self-nature. The no in the scripture is actually, the character is mu, as in my name, which means empty, immaculate, pure. So empty, immaculate, pure, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Rev. Master Jiyu translated mu as pure frequently in an attempt, I believe, to help Westerners to not trip over the alternate words, empty or immaculate. But one can just as easily trip over pure, to be frank. So we can trip over anything if we have a particular section of our mind switched on and then fixed on an understanding, for example, an understanding of the scripture of great wisdom, perhaps fixed for the rest of one's life, which would be sad because our understanding and minds are constantly changing. And Nietzsche isn't always an operation. Our minds are indeed miraculous. And from the blessing verse at the end of the meals, which I got wrong last night and reconnected with the words that actually Reverend Master Daishin reworded, changed a word. Pure, mu, immaculate, and beyond the world. Within, yet beyond the world of the opposites, the world of samsara, is the mind of the trainee. And originally it was Buddha nature. He changed it to mind. O holy Buddha, we take refuge in thee. That's a statement of faith right there, isn't it? Holy Buddha, we take refuge in thee. That which is within and beyond the opposites. And so we sit, we just sit, which in actual fact is a 24/7 activity, not just sitting in formal zazen. So something that gets lost sight of, actually, that we talk about bringing the mind of meditation into our daily lives, and I don't kind of go with that way of thinking, because I'm not sure what we refer to when we say the mind of meditation or the mind of zazen. We could go into that. Again, this requires of us an exercising of faith trust, this just sitting, the clear and firm intention, we've talked about that before, to keep returning to just sitting throughout the day. It is a returning. So returning to just sitting throughout the day and night requires of us to trust the process one enters into, knowingly or maybe unknowingly, when dedicating one's life to spiritual practice. I think it perhaps begins to dawn on one over time that there is a process, because you may notice yourself changing. And so that inspires a bit of confidence that actually I can trust this just sitting, because it's something's changing, and perhaps changing for the better. Refraining from evaluations, however, labelling one's progress or lack of it, and refraining from evaluating others around you or those who come into your world of awareness is paramount. And here I'm thinking of how one can definitely get some pretty strong views and ideas about what comes at you through the world of news and the world of world, really. Goodness me. So much is going on, but you do yourself harm if you engage in hate and judgmentalism. They too do not lose their Buddha nature. There is a way of thinking and being and acting which one can deliberately choose that at least doesn't nurture the habit of swirling around in the opposites, the dwelling in samsara. You can choose when somebody expresses a strong view that you can choose to not have a view. You're not required to have a view or an opinion, contrary to how society and the common ethos in the world is. All the while, as the opposites arise, nirvana, all that which lays within samsara, is lurking, calling to us, as now, nudging us to return to effort, awareness. The two are inseparable, actually. Effort, awareness. The one requires the other, requires the other. Return to clear, bright intention. We often use the word bright, and our school is called silent illumination, which is there. Bright illumination, it needs brightness to illuminate, doesn't it? There is a choice. And in my early years, I used to keep a book of wisdom, and somewhere I picked up and wrote down, "We live in the presence of constant choice." Sometimes it really doesn't seem that way. Our choices are limited. And sometimes our choice is to accept. And sometimes our choice is to take action. And that's where wise discernment kicks in. There is a choice. And formal Zazen has a particular place in this choosing, because one chooses deliberately, decides to allow projects, planning, and pain to subside. That's my three P's, what yours are. You can list for yourself, but maybe not list. This can take time. It can take time for one's mind to settle down. As it takes time, physical time, for a boat crossing a lake and arriving at a dock to stop bobbing around in the water, as well as the wake generated by its journey through the water to catch up with it, and eventually, if the boat just remains by the dock, it will settle, stop moving, and be physically still. So too with us when we settle to sit formally. It takes patience and time, and trust, and faith. Actually, there is a power in deliberate and consciously deciding to do something. Zazen, for example. When you want to, or you could do something else, even as you settle by the dock, so to speak, you can remake your decision. Your intention to just sit with no add-ons. So I do actually mean when you sit down and the bell goes, you can quietly say to yourself, "I'm just going to sit. I'm not going to hang on. I'm not going to push away anything." And that is making a very deliberate, conscious decision, a choice. The fact that all manner of activity arises, that choice, that exercising of your agency, weakens a habit. And perhaps I'll talk about habits tomorrow. Yes, the pain and the plans and the projects, whatever else will arise naturally. Enough. And it is not so easy to ride out the waves when there are painful thoughts, feelings, and emotions from the past, the present, or future, or about the future. And here, now, the Buddha calls silently within all of that chaos. Our job is to open ourselves, not to listen for something. No. Because we imagine that what we are listening for, or trying to conceive of what we're listening for, when actually, unbeknownst to us, we're sitting in the very open palm of the Buddha. An enlightenment being. Now I'm going to read you a poem by Mary Oliver in ending. It is short and quite unlike the majority of her poems. It speaks of love and saddened love. In what she says, a box full of darkness and loss and also transformation. I believe the transformation, the turning around, as we often talk about, happens as a consequence of our dedication, quiet dedication to the practice and the process. The poem is titled The Uses of Sorrow, and many of you may know this. In parentheses, it starts, In my sleep, I dreamed this poem. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this, too, was a gift. We can talk about this afternoon. And to reiterate, I believe the process of practice brings about a way of seeing, about a way of reflecting upon life from a radically different perspective. And I think many of you have had experience enough to know that this is indeed true. One's views turn around. And they turn around really because we have nurtured our choices towards faith. Faith that what we know immediately is not a mirage. It is but a mirage and doesn't have permanent, lasting reality. You may have noticed this already. And at some twist in my path years ago, I came to reflect upon my life, my misspent youth, and reflected upon it, and it dawned on me, oh, everything that has happened in the past has brought me to here, right now. I was out walking in the woods, I think, and I was so grateful. And as we say, as long as bowing, gratitude lasts, Buddhism lasts. Because our lives, however much we feel they're wrapped up in nasty wrapping, are in fact a gift.